This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. A new book is raising alarming concerns and stirring up quite a bit of controversy. It's about how much or how little American college students are actually learning. The author's central finding is this.
After 4 years of college, more than a third of college seniors are no better at synthesizing knowledge and putting complex ideas on papers than they were when they were freshmen. And there's more.
The authors also found that college students spend about 12 hours per week studying. They read and write much less than they used to, and a third of them hardly ever read a newspaper.
All of which prompts the rather provocative question, are college undergraduates actually learning? Are they acquiring critical thinking skills? That's today's talker. To get us started, here's a sampling of opinion from some students at Northeastern University in Boston.
I'm Kelsey. I'm a freshman, and my major is accounting. Yeah, I could see how critical thinking is down. It's more about memorization and knowing how the teacher wants you to answer questions than it is about actually learning the subject, really.
My name is Arielle Newton. I'm a second-year political science international affairs major, and I feel that critical thinking, although it's not like stated in my syllabus, it is implied that I need to think.
My name's Tom Ryan. I'm a math and chemistry major. I'm a freshman.
I think across all majors, critical thinking is down. But sometimes I see, especially, I hate to criticize my own major, but sometimes in a math class, you're pretty much just shown something and you're expected to repeat it like a trained chimp over and over and over again.
My name is Nasser Asafar. I'm a second year student and I'm an international business major. I think my critical thinking is actually improving as I progress. My really hard classes, they require extra effort and extra thinking outside the box, and I think that's what's helping me.
And some students at Northeastern University recorded earlier this week in Boston. Listeners, what do you think? Are you a college student? And if so, do you feel you are reading and writing enough and learning critical thinking skills? Are your courses rigorous enough? What's at stake if college students aren't learning critical thinking skills? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK to join the conversation. And joining us now is Richard Arum. He's professor of sociology and education at NYU and is one of the co-authors of the new book, Academically Adrift, Limited Learning on College Campuses. And Richard Arum, good to have you.
Anthony, thank you for having me on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure. These findings are alarming. They're based on a study of some 2,000 American college students that you did over several years. Tell us about the study, how it was set up.
Yeah, so we tracked several thousand students across 24 diverse colleges and universities in this country. The schools in our sample were from all four regions of the country and largely looked, fairly similar to what would be a representative sample of four-year colleges and universities. And what's unique about our study is as the students entered college and university in fall 2005, they were given an assessment that required them to read a set of documents, think critically about them, synthesize information across them, and write a task based on them. Write a task where you make an argument and support that argument, a logical argument with evidence.
So big and pool of students, broad sample of schools tested beginning at the end of the period. What did you find?
Well, again, these are the kind of, students, we didn't study subject-specific skills. We didn't assess students on math knowledge or political science knowledge or what have you, but these generic higher order skills, you would expect students to be able to do better on this task when they finish college than when they enter. And again, we found large numbers of students, they're not improving on this task. And it's not surprising that they're not improving on this test because when we asked them what they were doing in their colleges and universities, they were not being asked to do very much.
Now, I want to get into some of these results. First of all, when you say, let me break this down in two ways. You said that a lot of these students aren't improving. More than a third, 36%, right, showed no statistical improvement from when they were freshmen to when they were seniors.
Yeah. So this is we have a the test we use has about a 1,000 point range. They didn't go up more than 10 points on this test after 4 years. Mm-hmm. This is these are not meaningful gains for 36% of them. And again, when we looked at their coursework, we asked them, are you taking courses where you're asked to write 20 pages over the course of the semester? Half the students said, I don't have any course where I'm being asked to write 20 pages over the course of the semester. 32% say, I don't have a single course where I'm being asked to read more than 40 pages per week on average. 40 pages per week. And and large numbers, 36% are saying, we are studying 5 or fewer hours per week, studying alone 5 or fewer hours per week. So if you're not being asked to read at significant levels, if you're not being asked to write significant amounts, if you're not studying and preparing for class in ways that one would traditionally expect a full-time college student to be engaged in, it's no surprise that there are not that large numbers of these kids are not moving on this indicator.
So, Richard Arum, what's at stake here? Kids, according to your study, not working very hard, not doing much reading, not doing much writing, and apparently not acquiring these critical thinking skills. What's your concern? What's the broader issue that we need to be concerned about here?
Yeah, well, first let me say something's changed about this. That if you go back to the time use data, it wasn't always this way. The amount of time a full-time college student spends studying has dropped in half in the last few decades. What's at stake, I think is obvious to everyone considering this issue. How do you have a competitive economic system when large numbers of students are going through and not developing these higher order skills that students carry from job to job that are the basis of a 21st century knowledge economy? So there's huge implications in terms of the global economic competitiveness of our society. But as troubling to me is, how do you have a functioning democratic society when you're the educated elite that you're expecting to be highly engaged in civic activities and to be able to think critically about the complex issues that we face as a society, if we're not training that new cohort of citizens to be able to engage in those activities, I think that has very deep and disturbing implications for how we're going to wrestle with the problems that our society is facing right now.
We're talking with Richard Arum. He's author of Academically Adrift, Limited Learning on College Campuses. And we're asking you about critical thinking skills in American colleges. You can give us a call at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. And Richard Arum, I want to ask you a couple of questions, actually. There are some critics of your study. I know you've been answering some of the questions. I want to run through at least one or two of the concerns. One is that your study relies on a standardized test, the so-called CLA, College Learning Assessment, which doesn't, the critics would say, take into the entirety of a college education. What's your response to that?
Well, they're right. I mean, you would measure students on a multiple range of indicators and assess learning on a broad set of domains. The measure we use is arguably the best measure out there. It's imperfect. It's limited. If it was just the CLA results, set them aside and go on with your business.
Yeah.
But our book is not about simply an assessment result. Our book is about tracking students, asking them what they're doing in college, and those results. How do you tell me it's about the test when you look at these student results and these student responses and they're telling you, I don't have a 50% are telling you, I don't have any class where I'm writing 20 pages.
Let me bring Tyler Rosenbaum into this conversation. He's a senior at Brown University, and he's also the editorial page editor of the Brown Daily Herald, and he joins us right now from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Tyler.
Hello.
Great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we asked you on the show because you expressed some concern in the Brown Herald about the yardstick used in this study. Can you explain your concerns?
Well, certainly. And just to as a preface for this, I think the study was probably relatively well done, and we only really have anecdotal evidence from our side to go on. But again, as you said, we had some concern about using the standardized test as a basis for judging the improvement of college students. Certainly, I think it has some validity, but you know, we have experience ourselves of if the test doesn't have any actual bearing on your own effect on your own performance in school, maybe you won't try so hard to do well on it. There's certainly other methods of testing students' learning, and there's other things that it's important that students learn in college. For example, in addition to writing skills and critical thinking, having a diversity of viewpoints and improving that way. So that was one of our main concerns about that aspect of the test.
Tyler, I'm just wondering, I mean, you've been on the line, you've been listening to Richard Arum. Does any of what he's talking about, you're at an elite school, an Ivy League school down there in Providence at Brown, but does any of it resonate with you, what he's talking about?
Well, I certainly have to say that I think that this very much depends on the student. And I think, you know, the fact that a third of students didn't improve is certainly very troubling, but I think you can look at it as two-thirds actually did get something out of it. And certainly there's not going to be any hand-holding in college, unlike high school. There's no one going to be there to make sure you attend. There's no one going to make sure you do any work. There's no busy work. You know, grade inflation is real at many of these schools, and it does heighten the burden on students to make something of their own education. So the schools aren't going to force it on you. And if you're going to college just because that's what's expected of you, then I certainly think that this is very accurate. And I think, you know, I've looked at some of the things that Professor Arum and others have written, and it certainly seems like a lot of it is students expect college just to be like high school, kind of like a given in terms of it's easy and it's just a box to check. But I think that if they actually try to pursue their education, that a lot of these findings don't apply to people who apply themselves and who intend to do well.
You know, this is a subject that is really catching the imagination of our callers, and we've got a lot of them backed up, so I want to bring some of them into the conversation. Let's go to Nathan, who's calling from Jamaica Plain in Boston. Hi, Nathan.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for taking the call.
Happy to.
So my question is this. From my own high school experience, I remember it as a collection of tips and tricks to help you get into college, and then college was a collection of tips and tricks to help you land your first job. And I'm wondering if perhaps any of that sort of college as a finishing school for your first job has some bearing on the loss of focus on how to write, how to think critically.
That's a great question, Nathan. Thanks for that. Richard Arum, let me put that to you. I don't know if your study sort of goes into, as I read it, it didn't go into sort of the reasons for these things. But what do you think of Nathan's suggestion?
Well, no, I mean, we do have an account of what's changing in the organizational culture of colleges and universities that could possibly account for this, you know, dramatic shift in amount of effort that students are putting in that we've observed in the last several decades. And part of it, you know, indeed is we've largely moved to a model where students are seen as consumers and clients, and many students, certainly not all, and you know, I think Tyler is perfectly right to note that there's variation. We found students learning and applying themselves at every college and university we saw. So there is variation, but by and large, there are many, many students that seek the college experience as consumers and clients, that they want to attain a credential with the least amount of effort, a credential that can be traded for labor market success. And what these individuals are failing to realize and the colleges and universities are failing to communicate to them is that the credential, absence the development and growth of these higher order skills, is only worth half the, you know, it's only a half a good, and so what we were hoping for is that colleges and universities, as well as the students in them, will focus on this kind of traditional core function of schools, you know, academic study and academic rigor.
Let me take another call from Dan, who's calling from South Station in Boston. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Anthony. How are you?
Very well.
My call.
Sure. Glad to have you. What's on your mind?
Anthony, I'm a lieutenant colonel in the Army, and I'm the operations officer for a military intelligence training brigade. We do all the initial training for intelligence analysts, interrogators, and counterintelligence agents, and we have had to add 2.5 days of critical thinking classes to our program of instruction because operational commanders were saying that the our analysts are unable to write a report that they can act on. So, and we've also been able, seeing that current generation has a really hard time putting information together so they can brief commanders about what they've collected in the intelligence process. So this is not just a civilian education issue. The military and the Army in particular has recognized that both our instructors and our students have to be taught to critically think. So I'll take your comments off.
Okay, Dan. Well, thanks for that. Richard Arum, a nice example, I guess, of, or not a nice example, a poignant example of what you're talking about.
Indeed, it is a poignant example. You also hear from, you know, employers survey after survey that employers are very dissatisfied with the skills that current college graduates are bringing into the labor market, and skills not just in terms of the critical thinking ones that that Dan mentioned, but also their ability to write effectively.
You know, there's some I think there's some positive news in your study. That is, there's some possible remedies. It seems like you discovered that when faculty expectations matter and they're high, when there's an intense focus on writing and when there's real academic rigor, not surprisingly, kids show improvement, right? Or students show improvement.
Absolutely. There are things that can be done. Unfortunately, the incentives that are set up in colleges and universities today, the organizational incentives are completely misaligned with the ability to put in place those things, high expectations, academic rigor. Let me share with you another statistic out there. There's a survey that's been done for incoming college students during orientation weekend, all the way back to 1971. And they asked students, how many of you expect to get a B average or better when you're in college? And this is orientation weekend. So it's, you know, the colleges and universities are, this is what their students are bringing in to the colleges and universities. In 1971, 27% of students said, I expect to get a B or better average in college. Today, it's close to 70%.
Wow.
And you know what? You know what, Anthony? We don't disappoint them.
Hmm. Well, let me ask Tyler.
We give them those grades.
Let me ask Tyler, because he's sort of there in the belly of the beast. What about grade expectations and grade inflation, Tyler? Something you're aware that you see that there's evidence of?
Well, I certainly can't deny that there is grade inflation, particularly having talked to some of my friends at state schools back home and other schools. It's certainly worse at institutions like mine. That being said, as I said earlier, I think the students get out of it what they put into it. If you're going to get bad grades, if you're not going to learn anything, you might get bad grades either way. But if you really want to get something out of it, I think that's what's more important than the grade inflation. Though I certainly think that that has become worse as time goes on, and I know that Professor Arum in his study mentioned the problem of evaluations at the end of semester and professors trying to use that, and the fact that universities use that to give incentives to professors, and the professors then use that to perhaps ease the load on their classes, and I think that's certainly a factor as well. But I think that in this aspect, I don't think that students think that far ahead, and I think that they usually try to be. To be quite honest, I think with regard to those evaluations, I think apathy usually is more important than vindictiveness if the professor is honest. So I think that grade inflation can certainly be a problem, But I don't know that it's the biggest problem in this aspect.
Richard Arum, Tyler mentioned some of the factors there that contributed to this, and one of them is the way faculty members, the way faculties are basically graded by students, and that this plays a this contributes to their evaluation. The idea being that a faculty member who provides a course that is easy to do and gives hard gives grades high grades easily is going to get high marks from the students. Is that part of the problem?
The research is overwhelming that the course evaluations track with students' anticipated grades. So if students think that you're going to get a good grade in the class, they're going to think that when they fill out those course evaluations, they're much more likely to be favorably inclined and positively inclined towards the faculty member. Hmm. Now, let me challenge Tyler's point a little bit. I think absolutely he's right that, you know, if students who apply themselves will learn no matter what and so on. However, this is also the case. Students also satisfies. And the research is also out there that shows that if they think they can get a decent grade, what they understand as a decent grade, a B, for example, or even a B plus, with little work, they're happy to have that because they see that as an adequate grade in terms of their credentialing effect that they're hoping that the college degree is going to deliver. And so if they get that B with little work, there's lots of incentives for them not to bother doing much more. Hmm. However, if they feel that there's actually a sanction attached to it, that in fact, with the time use data we have out there, so on a typical day, Bureau of Labor Statistic time use data just come out, right? And in a recent year, 2009, the average student on a Monday to Friday, an average full-time student, college student, spends, ready for this, 3.3 hours a day.
3.3 hours. Well, Richard Arum, we're going to...
About half of that, you know, in class, half in homework.
Well,
that's a full-time student.
On that troubling statistic, we must end this segment. Richard Arum, thanks so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank
Richard Arum,
me on the air.
Professor of Sociology and Education at NYU. He's co-author of Academically Adrift, Limited Learning on College Campuses. And Tyler Rosenbaum at Brown University, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back after a short break. Up next, two of Boston's circus bands battle it out in our studios, plus this weekend's top arts and culture picks. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.